We're talking with the new sheriff of Dane County here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers appointed Calvin Barrett to replace David Mahoney, who stepped down last month after 14 years as sheriff. Barrett will serve out the remainder of the term that ends in January 2023. Barrett comes to the job having served as a Dane County deputy sheriff and an officer with Sun Prairie's police department. He taught law enforcement and criminal justice at Madison College, served as faculty director of the Criminal Justice Studies program. What questions do you have for Dane County's new sheriff? What do you want to know about his background or priorities for policing? It's 800-642-1234. Sheriff Calvin Barrett, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thank you so much for having me this morning.
Well, let's start with semantics here. You call yourself a peace officer and use that term to replace police officer. Why do you say peace officer?
Yeah, well, peace officer really just comes down to a mindset and a philosophy that I've developed over time by reading literature and reading the state statutes here in Wisconsin in regards to us, our purpose being to maintain the peace as sheriff deputies. And I mean by peace officer, not in regards to a lack of enforcement of laws and ordinances, but rather a simple mindset that focuses on the community engagement aspect of our job, proactive problem solving, and evidence-based approaches to community reduction. So as peace officers, our philosophy is to explore all reasonable means of problem solving and rely on taking law enforcement action as a last resort.
How is this mindset, this approach, received with officers? Have they used the term, or have officers asked you questions about being called it?
Yes, absolutely. Officers have asked about that, and the explanation has gained a lot of popularity just in regards to understanding what our mindset is and our philosophy. It really just refers to the idea that if we see ourselves as peacekeepers, that will illuminate in every aspect of our in our lives on and off duty.
You were a science teacher to middle school students and a coach in Texas before becoming a deputy sheriff here in Wisconsin. How does that experience inform how you want to see officers work with kids and relate to kids?
Oh, yes. Being a seventh and eighth grade middle school teacher in Texas was a great experience. I learned a lot from the students and really learned a lot about myself, too, as an educator and as a young man. And I believe working with our children and our youth is one of the most important aspects of our professions, as they are our future. Every hand that I shake, every sticker badge that I hand out as sheriff, every high five or elbow bump that I give, every child that I let sit in my patrol squad and turn on my lights will eventually be one of my deputies that I'm going to swear in. They're going to be one of my peace officers. And I realize that. And I also want our deputies to realize that, too, that the youth that we interact with in a positive way are going to be our partners one day, or they're going to be the individuals that we call supervisor one day. So it's very important that we invest in our youth and provide them with the time and the time and attention that they need in order to grow, because they are our future, and we have to ensure that they have a great understanding of what we do and how we do our jobs as peace officers.
Do you think they're getting the time and attention from officers? How do you think officers can improve their interactions with kids?
Yeah, it starts with, taking a sheriff's office wide mindset of community oriented policing. Now, I know we do have community police officers here that are designed to work specifically in specific communities throughout Dane County, but office wide, we have to all take that approach, not just in our communities, but also in our facilities as well.
Do you support programs that place police officers in schools or school resource officers, as we hear them called?
Yes, and I do, because my experience is much different than that of those in other parts of our state or our country that may have had negative interactions with school resource officers. Growing up in San Diego, California, I still remember the name of our school resource officer. His name was Officer Cutler, and he was the coolest, buffest, nicest, had the coolest hair, and could dunk a basketball at that time, which was huge for us in elementary school. And I see how important that played in my understanding and of what a peace officer was and their role. It wasn't just enforcement, but it was mentorship. It was big brother, big sister. It was someone who I can speak to confidentially in regards to issues that I was going through at that time, as my father was a law enforcement officer. So I did have someone that I could lean on in our schools that really helped. So my perspective of a school resource officer is much different than those who may oppose it that see it as a negative tool or a negative presence in our educational institutions.
So even at the elementary school level, because, you know, critics would say their presence creates these unintended consequences like suspensions and expulsions and arrests, and especially far and away for students of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really understanding the role of a school resource officer is important to educate the general public in regards to that. Is that, you know, in our schools, we are not there as an enforcement arm. We are really there as a last resort and as a mentor and as someone that can really provide perspective and understanding and really be there as, in a support role more than an enforcement role. And I think that's really important for everyone, you know, for us to educate our communities in regards to our, you know, our main goals of being in those schools.
I want to look more closely at use of force. You're a father of two daughters, and they bear witness to the Black Lives Matter movement, the killing of George Floyd, and learning the long history of police brutality and systemic racism. When did you decide to have the talk about being Black and how to interact with police?
Yeah, we started in our family. We started very early, just in regards to being aware of who we are and how society views us at times. We felt as a family, my wife and I, that we can try to avoid it. But when our children were coming home and bringing stories of how, you know, they were viewed differently or how they may have been treated differently, we felt at that time it was they were ready for that conversation. So we started it very early. And though both of my children are indeed biracial, they have darker toned skin. And so we have to take that into consideration when they're out in public and there are conversations and things that we've had with them at a very early age to ensure that they are doing everything possible to make sure that they're not seen as a threat, whether it's in the community or whether it's with law enforcement or, you know, just being in society in general.
Does being a parent yourself influence your philosophy toward policing, toward how you guide officers?
Yeah, and it's something that's very important. I mean, no matter what uniform I wear or what job position that I have, you know, I am Black and my life does matter. And so are my children and their lives matters as well. So I think just bringing the perspective of my personal and professional experiences to a sheriff's office as a leader really is important and them understanding the perspective of something that has never been seen before, ever, in the history of the sheriff's department or sheriff's office until now, and that's an African-American sheriff. So my life experiences, my professional experiences, my educational experiences really bring a unique perspective to how I lead the sheriff's office.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dane County Sheriff Calvin Barrett about his background, his priorities in policing. With your questions as well, what do you want to know about his priorities and what he would like to do as the new sheriff? 800-642-1234. You are a lead instructor on defense and arrest tactics in training new officers. When should officers be allowed to use force?
And I believe officers should be allowed to use force as a last resort and after exhausting all means of non-force related actions. And again, as a defense and arrest tactics, are the definition of DAT, which is what the acronym breaks down to, is a system of verbalization skills coupled with physical alternatives. So right there from the beginning, we tell officers, we tell our sheriff's office deputies that our number one goal is communication and de-escalation. And that's in our definition. and it's coupled with physical alternatives, not physical punishments, alternatives, because our goal is to gain voluntary compliance. And if that includes conversations, de-escalation, professional communication skills up front, and only resorting to use of force as a last resort. And that not only is taught in our law enforcement academies throughout the state of Wisconsin, but it will also continue to be taught here at the Dane County Sheriff's Office as long as I'm the sheriff.
Is there enough cultivation, enough training, enough advancement in de-escalation? Does it get the attention you think it deserves?
I think it's gained more attention recently here, but in the curriculum that we have in our state law enforcement curriculum for our academies, it's implied in every aspect of what we do, especially in use of force. So it's all throughout the curriculum in our law enforcement academies. Though it hasn't been technically termed de-escalation, use of force is always our last resort, and communication and gaining voluntary compliance is always our number one goal. And can it be taught more? Absolutely. As a trainer and educator coming from the academic side of the criminal justice system, we can never have enough training and we can never have enough education.
What does the training and education say about blocking someone's ability to breathe, what we would commonly call a chokehold?
Yeah, and that's a fantastic question. And what I think, what I would love for the listeners and what our communities to know is that in different parts of our countries outside of the state of Wisconsin, is that many law enforcement agencies may use a chokehold as a control device or a way to control an individual who is out of control. Here in the state of Wisconsin, as long as I've been a law enforcement officer, we have never used, taught, or even discussed using a chokehold or blocking off someone's ability to breathe as a way to control them. Chokeholds are not banned in our curriculum, but they're seen as a last resort and are at the level of deadly force. Meaning if an officer has assessed the situation and feels that the use of deadly force is authorized, then a chokehold can be used if they can articulate an objectively reasonable use of that chokehold in order to save their lives or the lives of someone else.
What do you make then of legislation that is working its way through the legislature that would ban chokeholds? Is the legislation warranted?
Yeah, it's something that needs to have additional conversation, and that's something we spoke about in detail in the Speaker's Task Force that I was a part of, and really understanding and educating really what not only a chokehold is, but also a lateral vascular restraint, which is the restriction of blood to the brain, which can cause someone to go unconscious. So additional conversations need to be had to understand and educate the purposes and where exactly a chokehold falls in our use of force. Intervention options as Wisconsin law enforcement officers.
We're talking with Dane County Sheriff Calvin Barrett is here. He assumed the job last month. Do you live in Dane County? What do you think your newly appointed sheriff should know? How do you feel about reducing jail populations? Do you support that goal? How do you feel about community policing? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with Dane County's newly appointed Sheriff Calvin Barrett, what he brings to the job. And Sheriff Barrett is with us for 10 more minutes. Jerry is joining us from West Allis with a question. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
First of all, thank you for your service. I'm an old white guy in Milwaukee, and my mixed-race son lives in Madison, and I know you're going to take good care of him. The thing that I think needs to happen for us is, I mean, black people know that they're what's happening to them. And I think the police, in a way, know, and the law enforcement community knows the problems that are happening with them. I think someone has to go out to us old, conservative white guys and tell us, explain to us one more time why it is that blackness is seen as a threat and the people on the fringeness and why these kind of beliefs, mistaken beliefs, are so common that they get everywhere. And I'll take your answer off the air.
Sheriff Barrett.
Yes. Yes, that is an excellent question, and thank you so much for calling in and your time. I think coming from the academic side of the criminal justice system, that education is key, and that is one of my top priorities is community engagement and getting out into our communities and educating all of the Dane County residents in regards to where we as a profession have come from, where we are currently at, but more importantly, where we are looking to go in the future. So thank you so much for your question. I really appreciate your trust and your trust in not only me as your sheriff, but in our sheriff's office deputies and taking care of your grandchild who is biracial. So thank you so much.
What have you learned from serving on the Assembly Task Force that, you know, seeks ways to address racial disparities in our state?
The number one and probably the most important thing that I learned on being on the task force is that it is indeed possible. And I hope that we have set a national model on understanding how working collaboratively with the community can come to reasonable solutions to issues that we find in our communities. In these meetings, we had a great opportunity over the past 6 or 7 months to not only learn about other law enforcement agencies and their policies and procedures, but also from community members who have experienced both good and bad and what they feel is important and what they feel we need to do as a profession to move forward and treat everyone in all of our communities in an inclusive manner. We also were blessed with opportunities to hear from community members who have been affected by those who have not used their force in a justified and inappropriate way. And it was just a very educational opportunity that I will stick with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing, there's a lot of listening that went on through this task force, a lot of opportunity to really reflect on what people were saying. Was progress made?
Yes, I believe it was an opportunity for relationships to be built, for barriers to be taken down, and for us really to, even if we didn't find consensus or agreement on a specific topic, that we really just disagreed on the idea or the topic and not the individual. And we really learned that we all have the same common goals. We just have different paths or journeys to which we feel we need to get there.
Dwayne in Wausau would like to ask a question. Dwayne, hi.
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to know if the new sheriff heard about the law in Texas, I believe, that was passed where you could carry, open carry a handgun without any permit or training. And, you know, I mean, I have hunting rifles and shotguns, you know, grew up with guns and scouts with a BB gun and a .22, so you learn to respect them. But what he feels on that, you know,
open carry laws without permits, Dwayne is asking about, Sheriff.
Yeah, and I haven't been able to read up on the exact specifics of that, but I think education and training is one of the most important aspects, not only of our profession, but anytime you're dealing with a weapon or anything that could take a life or injure other people. So I think education and training is important on the front end. And without knowing the specifics, that would just be what I would be able. That's what I can speak on that topic at this point. But thank you so much for your question.
We're talking with Dane County Sheriff Calvin Barrett about policing, his background, his priorities, your questions as well, 800-642-1234. Jack is joining us from Caledonia. Hi, Jack.
Yeah, how you doing? Question about resisting arrest. Person resists arrest. And nothing happens, you know, he finally gets arrested and he's taken to court. The judge gives him a little bit of a sentence for resisting arrest. But if the arresting officer, if it goes south, you know, during the arrest and ends up, you know, shooting the individual, he can lose his job. He can, you know, be sued, go to jail. So my point is, resisting arrest, could we make it where it's more of a penalty to resist instead of just a little slap on the wrist, since the actions of the police officer, you know, can end him up in jail?
Right. And that is something that is really handled on the on a higher level in regards to the legislature, who actually writes the statutes and creates the punishments for violating those, but also, too, on the level of the courts and the judges who make those decisions. And I believe that's very important to have that division of power, right? Because officers, we enforce the laws that are written by a separate entity of our criminal justice system, which really allows for shared power and shared governance. So I really believe that addressing that on those levels is a better option than having us address it as officers. But there's definitely some work that could be done, and we just have to look at it on a case-by-case basis.
I want to land here on Dane County's jail population. You want to reduce it. What are your top-line priorities, your top-line reasons for making this a goal?
Right, and coming in to this position and learning so much in the first 3.5 or 4 weeks that I've been here, it's really understanding that as the Dane County Sheriff, I have limited influence or zero control over who comes in. If officers within Dane County have the appropriate paperwork and they bring them into our facility, I have to take them. If probation and parole sets a sanction on an individual and has the appropriate paperwork, I have to take them within our facility. If a judge sentences someone to time in our facility, I have to take them. So really understanding the role and understanding the control that I have over the past few weeks has really been educational for me. So in understanding that, I understand the piece that I have, and the most important piece that we do have control over is what we do when they're in our custody. And focusing on the programming and providing a space that can allow us to treat and provide training to individuals while they're in our custody, so that when they are released back into our communities, they are not committing the same crimes, and we've provided them with the tools they need to be successful and to reduce our overall recidivism. And I think that's one of the most important keys that I have as the Dane County Sheriff.
Sheriff Barrett, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Calvin Barrett is Dane County's new sheriff. He was appointed by Governor Evers to finish the term of David Mahoney, who resigned last month. Just ahead, it is an hour-long conversation devoted to exploring new music by Milwaukee artists. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.